It doesn't say righteousness was the highest virtue. Righteousness is the highest virtue. It leads to enlightened happiness, not that it will someday in the future in a different place. It leads right away, it leads to enlightened happiness.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Welcome to In Good Faith. Today we explore some brand new spiritual territory with a tradition we haven't been able to speak about or with before, which is Zoroastrianism. So I hope your ears perked up a little bit like mine did when we were finally able to connect with someone from that tradition. Armen Ariane is our guest today. In studio is Heather Bigley, In Good Faith senior producer.
Hello.
And also James Sturtevant.
Hello, hello.
Heather, did you know anything about Zoroastrianism?
Well, as you're going to hear, Armand's going to do a run-through of Austrian masterworks. And I, in fact, studied Die Zauberflöte when I was taking German in college. And so that was my first introduction. And then I quickly connected it with Masonic temple rituals because... If you don't know, Die Zauberflöte borrows from those.
Oh, that's Mozart's The Magic Flute.
Mozart's The Magic Flute.
Armen does a beautiful job of talking about this ancient tradition, parts of which and the wisdom of which show up in all kinds of religious traditions today, from Christianity, Judaism, and even Islam.
He is a council member on the Zoroastrian Studies Council at Claremont Graduate University. And we'll hear him talk about, he was featured on, Morgan Freeman's National Geographic series, The Story of God.
So we begin at the beginning with him telling us how this came to be.
So most of the names we use are in Greek. So Zoroaster or Zoroastrianism are Greek names. Cyrus is the Greek name for Persian Kurosh or Hebrew Koresh. So Zarathustra would actually be the correct name or the non-Greek name for the founder of the religion.
And could you talk about when that happened and how the founding happened?
So we don't exactly know. We know that it's at least 3,800 years old, but it could be much older than that. Zarathustra conveyed his message in 17 songs. Of course, the later scriptures have added much to it, but Zarathustra's message is only in 17 songs. I found Zoroastrianism really through Cyrus the Great, the Persian emperor. When I was about 12 years old, there was a big 25th century celebration of Cyrus the Great. And the king of Iran invited many statesmen from all over the world to meet in Persepolis, the capital of the Persian Empire, and how he paid tribute to Cyrus the Great as the king of kings. And a few years later, when I was like 14 years old, my family sent me to a private Christian boarding school in Vienna, Austria. Of course, because this was a Christian school, I learned again about Cyrus the Great in the Bible. And here, Cyrus the Great is, in Hebrew, he's the Mashiach, or the Messiah. And I was surprised. So here's another Persian guy like myself, who we thought he's a king, but over here in the civilized West, he's the Messiah. His title was actually handed down to Jesus in the New Testament. And that was very surprising to me. Cyrus the Great created the first Declaration of Human Rights. He had woman rights. He got rid of slavery. He freed the Jews from Babylon. In Isaiah 42-45, he's held at the highest honor. And that was very interesting to me. Those were all things that I had not learned in my native country or the native country of Cyrus. To see such high level of respect for a Persian king in a civilized Western culture was very surprising to me. And also in the country of Austria, the country of music. We had the famous symphony by Strauss, also Sprach Zarathustra, which is known right. in the United States more as the music to the Space Odyssey 2000. Also, the famous symphony by Mozart, the Zauberflöte, which is also about Zarathustra. And then, of course, the famous novel by Friedrich Nietzsche, known as Thus Spoke Zarathustra, or Also Sprach Zarathustra. And all that was guiding me to want to know more about Zoroastrianism. And of course, we had religious classes, Bible studies, and where I discovered that the three wise men were actually Zoroastrian priests coming from the East, following the star to Bethlehem to witness the birth of Christ. This was during a time where in my native country, we had a revolution and my country became a theocracy, meaning that the clergy took over the government. Many of us at the time were going through a roller coaster in terms of discovering where we are going from here. And then when I found Zoroastrianism, it was like, that's what I believe, that's what I've been saying. I don't think I ever converted to Zoroastrianism. I think most people don't. We are who we are. We just discover our comfort zones and ourselves more than anything else.
I love how you state that.
I had one great-grandfather who was a Baha'i, a grandfather who was a Sunni. My parents were Shia, Muslim. And I was brought up in a Christian boarding school. One of my best friends was Jewish that I grew up with. I felt very, very comfortable with, doesn't matter who the person's background is, no matter what church, temple we attend, what communities we come from, I think there are a lot of things that we have in common, aspiration for life, culture, nature, and so on. What was interesting to me about Zoroastrianism was the concept of God to start with. I really, truly wanted to believe in a God, but I needed proof. I was trying to ignore it growing up, but when I discovered the way God is described by Zarathustra, then it made sense to me. Ahura Mazda is the name of God. So Mazda, Da in Sanskrit means wisdom. Mass means massive. So Mazda means massive knowledge. What kind of a knowledge would it take to create what we call Asha? Asha means Mother Nature, the truth, the facts. It must be massive. But what makes this Mazda interesting is the Ahura, which means the essence. Essence of this mass Da is very life friendly. It likes us. It likes our planet. It likes our world. It likes our oceans. It likes our trees. It likes this whole existence of life.
Besides the part of knowledge and wisdom, for a lot of people, spirituality also includes, I guess, what they would call some connection with the heart. Was there something when you found these teachings that also connected that way?
Yes, and that's Asha. It's the first thing I discovered about Zoroastrianism, not Ahura Mazda. So the first thing I discovered, and I really enjoyed about it, is that I am, and you are. And everything around me exists. And now I know that there is an essence of a supreme intellect that would want you and I have this conversation. The next question is, what else does he want me to do? This is a discovery, a personal discovery, that my guess would have been at that point was that Ahura Mazda would want me to become Asha compatible.
This makes me curious about, are there particular daily or weekly rituals that you do to feel connected to whatever that divine knowledge and wisdom is?
Yes. So that's a very good question, Steve, because let's look at the motto of the Zoroastrian prayer, which in my opinion, I would call this prayer a miracle. So the prayer, which is called Ashambhu, goes like this. Good thoughts, good words, good deeds. Righteousness is the highest virtue. It leads to enlightened happiness. This radiant happiness comes to the person who is righteous for the sake of righteousness alone, and not for any rewards or fear of punishment. What I find most fascinating about this prayer, it totally connects you to Asha. It's totally composed in present term. It doesn't say righteousness was the highest virtue. Righteousness is the highest virtue. It leads to enlightened happiness, not that it will someday in the future in a different place. It leads right away. It leads to enlightened happiness. The other thing that makes this prayer very interesting is that it's totally universal. There's no mention of any geographical place. It was composed for humanity. It's not tribal, because the name of the prophet is not there. As you and I know, in most religions, as you're praying, the name of the prophet is repeated constantly. But what's most interesting, where is God in this prayer? It's you and I who have to become godlike and take action. So it can be adopted by many nations, cultures, color. It's not tribal, and it does not have an expiration date. This was composed at least 4,000 years ago, and it's still very relevant today.
This is In Good Faith. We'll be back with more in just a few moments.
Hi, I'm Stephen Cap Perry, host of In Good Faith. Nothing captivates me more than people setting out on an adventure, especially if it's a place I wish I could go to or a subject I wish I knew more about, but I don't live in the right place or I don't have the equipment or the expertise. I'm telling you about a podcast from our BYU Radio family of podcasts, an award-winning podcast called Constant Wonder. With host Marcus Smith, you'll be expanding your horizons on all kinds of discovery. It could be science, it could be art, history, and more. Do you need that feeling of awe and wonder in your life more? I do, and I love it when I see how to experience that by hearing the stories of people who are doing and exploring all of those things that are so interesting to me. Check out the podcast, Constant Wonder.
Welcome back to In Good Faith. Today we're chatting with Armin Ariane about symbolism in Zoroastrianism. I'm wondering if, for instance, if I came to, is it a temple?
Yeah.
What type of a service or prayer, or what would happen if I came to such a meeting?
So the symbol of Zoroastrianism is the light. And as a matter of fact, all elements are precious in the Zoroastrian tradition, including earth, water, air, but most precious is the fire. We use the fire to advance our technology, our knowledge, our culture, our species. So that's why fire is the most precious element in Zoroastrianism, but it really means it represents enlightenment. So when we meet at the temple, we light up a fire, which is normally on. If you go to a major fire temple, say, for instance, the one in Udvada, India, or the one in Yazd, Iran, they've been burning for thousands of years. Many people believe that Zoroastrians worship fire. Well, they don't.
It's just a symbol.
It's a symbol of enlightenment. I don't even think, like in the Persian language, which Zoroastrianism grew within the Achaemenid Empire, we don't even have a word for worship. The word that we use in Persian for worship is parastesh, which means to nurture. We are caretakers of the fire. Because in Zoroastrianism, the idea is try to gain enough knowledge to at least get closer to that mass intellect and have a better understanding of his essence, Ahura Mazda.
To take this cosmic insight and knowledge, how does it practically affect, for instance, in the way that you raise your children or that you act in your business, those type of daily things?
At some point, when a child is ripe at his own will, they can choose to become a Zoroastrian, which is a pledge. You put a white shirt, which is called a sedre. It's white for its purity. Zoroastrians were always white, including funerals. We don't mourn when there is a funeral because death is just part of life. Life would have never existed without death. We are going back to Asha now. So what we teach our children is that you are a part of Asha. The goal is to become Asha compatible. I took my kids one time to an acorn festival, and there was a Native American priest who was singing and playing their instruments. And then when I heard that translation of their prayer, I went up to that priest and I said, the whole time I'm thinking that Zoroastrianism, I know how and when it influenced the Western Abrahamic religions and the Eastern thoughts, but I don't see any connections to the Native Americans. And here what you recited was so Zoroastrian. And the Native American priest looked at me and he said, but of course, he said, if you're talking about this planet, and he pointed out up this sky, this earth, and you and I, this species, our proposal should be the same for a better life, for a better world. In Zoroastrianism, what's more important, it is that self. We are in the driver's seat. We need to take charge of and heal the world together with that knowledge.
I read that at one point there were 21 different books of scripture, but Alexander destroyed all but one of those books that remains as a book of scripture. Is that telling accurate?
What Zarathustra did, he composed his entire message in 17 songs. They're songs, right? Mm-hmm. That's another influence mm-hmm. that you have in many religions where you sing, including the azan in Islam and the hymns that right. they sing in the church. So Zarathustra's message was actually saved in poetry and in a very specific rhyme that cannot be forgotten. Zarathustra right. actually installed an antivirus in his message by posing poetry with a very specific ending and rhyme that could be preserved. Even though Alexander destroyed everything, and then, of course, Genghis Khan and the Arab conquest mm-hmm. after that, but the message of Zarathustra, which are inspiring also because you're singing, was preserved in people's mind, something that was recited daily, including that same prayer that we went over earlier.
Do you have a favorite or something that you rehearse in your mind that is meaningful to you that you could tell me about?
Not just me, but most of us. Our first prayer is Ashambhu, which is about one person, right? Righteousness comes to the person who is righteous for the sake of righteousness alone and not for any rewards or fear of punishment. The second prayer, now suddenly we are a group, is that we should pick our leaders based on their righteousness, based on their act. In Zoroastrianism, you never need confession because the motto of Zoroastrianism is a very specific order. It's good thoughts first, good words, good deeds. That's when you go to a temple, right, you see it on the top that says good thoughts, good words, good deeds. It could be translated as constructive thoughts, constructive words, and constructive deeds. And again, these are all a part of Asha, right? When we say constructive, meaning to become Asha compatible. A student, before he takes an action, should think, then talk to a mentor. A patient should talk to a doctor before taking any action, and so on. So the order of the motto, good thoughts, good words, good deeds, practice in daily basis is very, very important. The part that I enjoy the most about it is that in Zoroastrianism, we need to take actions ourselves. The concept of a messiah in Zoroastrianism is not for a messiah that would come back someday, but we are supposed to be a messiah. Every one of us has the duty of becoming a messiah to refresh the world, as Zarathustra calls it.
Very famously, Morgan Freeman recently was with National Geographic talking in his series, The Story of God, and said that he related and felt closely aligned with the teachings he had learned from Zoroastrianism. And I am curious, for those of us who are new to learning about this tradition, is there something you would want us to know?
Morgan Freeman is a great thinker, and he has always been fascinated by existence, by us and God. He even played God one time in a movie.
He's often referred to as the voice
of God.
And
he has the voice of God too, of course. I think the part that he enjoyed the most is how fresh the oldest monotheistic religion in the world, how current it can be, how up-to-date it can be, and how it puts the responsibility of healing the world on us and not necessarily waiting for a miracle to happen for our prophets to come back and drag us out of misery and despair. We need to take charge of that ourselves. How? With Ashambhu, and by choosing righteous leaders who we choose based on their thoughts, words, and actions. And I think that's what he really captured him. And then he came out and he says, I'm a Zoroastrian. And I think he is. You know, we like to label ourselves all the time. That's just, I think, our nature. But when somebody asks me if I'm a Zoroastrian, many times I say, you know, I would like to, and most days I am.
Most days.
It is, we don't have to be labeling ourselves. Many attributes of so many different cultures can be brought into our families, into our own actions. We can learn from each other. But ultimately, it puts so much responsibility on us. I never forget, I caught my son one time talking to his friend. He was a little kid. And he was telling his friend, do you know why I like to be a Zoroastrian? And I was really curious. And I tried to listen to what he's going to say. And the friend said, why? He said, because you don't have to do anything. It's so easy. And then later on, I told him, you know, you said that when you were a kid, but it's actually very difficult because of all the responsibilities you have. It's not just about memorizing some prayers and then asking God for favors. When we pray, we don't ask God for favors. It is really meditation and help us to gain more knowledge so that we can become Asha compatible. And so that we can understand a little bit better the essence of the mass intellect.
That was Armin Ariane speaking with Steve, or really teaching us about Zoroastrianism. What I found really fascinating about what he had to say is this idea of God being a mass intellect. Like, you can recognize that you have an intellect, but you couldn't create this world. Something more intelligent than you must have created this world. I think that's really compelling evidence for God. But he also talks about this idea of you need to step up and play a role. I think he says at one point, become God-like by making good decisions, by taking good actions. It's not just some passive thing where you can sit around and let the massive intellect dictate everything. You need to act on that. Good thoughts, good words, good deeds. I really love that.
The idea of cooperating with God in improving you, being willing to buy into this process of this isn't always easy. This isn't always the path I might have chosen, but I'm going to buy into what you can either make of me or do with me or through me. And I hear that in him as well.
Yeah, I loved hearing these different prayers, these different simple prayers that have been passed down over literal centuries, this idea that righteousness is the greatest virtue. Early translations of the word righteousness in the Hebrew Bible are actually connected to the word justice. Mm. And early translations of the word virtue, actually, the original translations have to do with strength. So as I was listening to this, I kept thinking, oh, righteousness is the greatest strength. And then I thought, oh, yeah, and justice is the greatest virtue.
Because he talked about symbolism, and the further back you go in scriptures, the more symbolism is used. In fact, you know, we're trying to get, quote, the most accurate translation. How many cubits was the ark? But they may have just been saying it was so big, and he was fasting for 40 days and 40 nights, and maybe that happened. But they may have been saying he fasted a really long time. But we become so literal that we miss the lessons sometimes. And so these stories are from so far back that I found myself thinking, okay, when in my life do I encounter a flame? Like I light a birthday cake and we quickly extinguish it before it, you know, melts wax on the cake we're all waiting to eat.
Yeah.
That's not just a real deep moment for me. But I just thought something that simple, I want next time I see a flame to say, this is the Zoroastrian symbol for enlightenment, for knowledge. And we talk about this in my tradition and others as well, being enlightened or light being a symbol, but I don't ever focus on it.
Yeah.
And if I could start seeing the natural world and even the phenomenon like fire teaching me spiritual truths, cooperating with that, I think it would be to my spiritual benefit. Many thanks to Armand Ariane for speaking with us. This episode was produced by Heather Bigley and Josh Orton. Our production team also includes Aaliyah Ebert, Leah King, Katerina Martinich, and James Sturtevant. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen and Lauren Sandberg. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. We hope you'll give us a review or a comment at YouTube, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, and spread the word.